Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso. Imagine going to the doctor and not understanding what medical professionals are telling you. Worse, imagine an ambulance taking you to the hospital in a life or death situation, but you and your family can't understand the language spoken by the emergency medical services crew or emergency room physicians. This can make decision-making difficult and lead to devastating consequences for your medical care. Elizabeth Garcia suffered a heart attack at home. Her husband, Guillermo, called 911, but the first responders who arrived did not speak Spanish. Elizabeth was rushed to a hospital in Oceanside, where she was intubated and put on life support. Guillermo recalled, "As my wife continued to grow ill, she was only able to communicate by signs. I feared my wife's pain was caused by the life support tubes causing her to choke." But he could not find an interpreter to convey his suspicions, and his wife died. Only after her death was he finally able to speak with a medical interpreter, who explained that the cause of her death was due to vomiting and choking, which infected her bloodstream and caused brain damage. Guillermo said, "I'm haunted by the helplessness of my wife's situation, and believe had there been an interpreter on hand, I would have been able to alert the nurses of her choking, preventing infection." In another case, a Somali refugee woman was told by her doctor that if she did not take her medications correctly, she would not survive. She didn't understand all of the words, and she believed she was going to die. This led to unnecessary fear and panic. Now, a bill passed by the state legislature, AB 2325, is awaiting the governor's signature, and it would require medical translation services in many languages. On Monday, Councilwoman Marty Emerald held a press conference in City Heights, along with community leaders and family members of patients who have suffered due to a lack of interpreters. They called on Governor Jerry Brown to sign the bill and members of the public to also convey their concerns to the governor. East County Magazine reporter Nadine Abbott was on hand at the press conference, and here is what Councilwoman Emerald had to say.
There are approximately 60 languages and separate dialects spoken in our schools, in our stores, in our doctor's offices, but very few translators to help these immigrants and the refugees understand what their doctors have to say, or explain to their doctors what their symptoms are, their concerns are, or to translate for their loved ones. This is an enormous problem, not just here in San Diego, but all over the state of California, and I would suspect it's an issue in other parts of the country where we have immigrant and refugee populations. Nearly 7 million Californians have limited English capacity, frequently leading to negative health care outcomes due to language barriers and additional costs to the Medi-Cal program. On top of all of the issues that these people have to face, they have a difficult time even communicating with their health care providers in order to cure a disease, to treat a chronic condition, or to prevent illness in the first place. And ultimately, that cost winds up coming back to each and every one of us who has to pick up the tab through Medi-Cal or through higher insurance premiums. This is a vital and serious health issue and a consumer issue. Right now, AB 2325, authored by our former State Assembly Speaker, John Perez, is heading to the governor's desk. This is an opportunity to make sure that everybody in the state of California has access to good, solid health care, access currently denied because doctors and patients aren't able to communicate effectively.
Another speaker was Benjamin Prada with the American Friends Service Committee, a human rights organization serving migrants and their families.
Our organization definitely supports AB 2325. fundamentally important that we recognize the number of families that need interpretation. In the state of California, we only consider that almost half of the people in Medicare right now need interpretation services. Under the Affordable Care Act, of those enrolling in Medicare, about 3 million or 5 years will require interpretation services. Just here in the city and county of San Diego, we have even indigenous families that do not have access to interpretation services when we consider the Mixteco, Zapoteco communities of North County, the Central Valley of California, who have for many years have not had access to interpretation services in their own indigenous languages.
Our reporter Nadine Abbott spoke with Amanda Rehm, the policy advisor for this political campaign, Interpreting for California.
So the legislation is state would expand basically cover California Medicaid.
Yeah, there's 3 million people coming in under the expansion of Medi-Cal, mm-hmm. under the Affordable Care Act, who need access to an interpreter. And the federal dollars are there. The state needs to make the decision to draw down those funds to provide these badly needed interpreters. Almost half the people in the Medi-Cal program speak English less than well, and they need access to interpreters. So we're able to meet a really pressing healthcare quality goal because of the Affordable Care Act and these available dollars.
And finally, Carl Lee, a businessman and immigrant himself, spoke about his father being in the hospital before he passed away and how difficult it was for him to communicate. He issued a call for unity for people across the San Diego region to build a movement for support of the measure from San Diego to Sacramento.
Let's get everybody here to support our cause, 2325 AB, and let's make this happen. Let's get the city of San Diego involved. Let's get everybody that needs interpretation the help that they need. Thank you, everybody, for being here.
Alba Quiñones fled domestic abuse in El Salvador, hoping to seek asylum in the United States. But after enduring allegedly abusive conditions in a U.S. Border Patrol detention facility, she has now filed a lawsuit against the U.S. government, the latest in a string of such lawsuits, Mother Jones Magazine reports. Border Patrol facilities are meant to be only temporary holding cells until people picked up crossing the border are turned over to Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE. But due to overcrowding at ICE facilities, the Border Patrol has wound up holding people for long periods of time under sometimes inhumane conditions, the lawsuits allege. Quiñones alleges that a Border Patrol agent threw away medications she needed, including insulin for diabetes and other pills for high blood pressure, migraines, and convulsions. Her suit also states that the facilities ran out of toilet paper and that women were not provided enough sanitary pads or tampons. She was forced to use the same pad for days, winding up with her clothes soaked in blood. Multiple immigrants have made similar complaints. Some say they were placed in a frigid room that guards called hierria, Spanish for icebox. Prisoners' fingers turned blue from the cold. They were not provided any mattresses or blankets. People were forced to lie on the cold concrete or stand up until they collapsed from exhaustion. Half of the prisoners in one such facility in Texas are children, immigrant lawyers report. One prisoner says no treatment was provided for a broken bone. Another says she went an entire day without being given any food. Border Patrol's internal policies should prevent such abuses, but the guidelines are not being followed, advocates say, and since the guidelines are not federal law, an attorney representing immigrants says he can't ask the courts to stop these practices. Now, California Senator Barbara Boxer and another member of Congress, Representative Lucille Roybal-Allard, both Democrats, have introduced two bills that would set federal standards for humane treatment of prisoners in both ICE and Border Patrol facilities. But the bills face an uphill battle in Congress, where Republicans want to focus on beefing up border security and have shown little interest in how detainees are treated once in custody. But even if new laws are passed, would they be enforced? To date, even though the Border Patrol is out of compliance with its own internal policies, the agency has not yet set up an oversight process to assure that even the current guidelines are being followed. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Leon Thompson.
This year, the number of children illegally crossing the border north through Mexico into the United States has increased to approximately 48,000, which is 92% higher than last year, and is projected to reach over 60,000 by the end of the 2014 fiscal year. The vast majority of these children are not coming from Mexico, but in fact are fleeing Central American countries like Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador. To deal with the influx, immigrant minors and adults are being shipped to warehouses and other facilities in order to hold them until they can be deported or granted a green card. 700 minors are currently being held in a warehouse in Nogales, Arizona, where living conditions have become deplorable due to overcrowding and lack of supplies. Luckily, this is only a temporary housing for the children, who will spend only enough time in Nogales to receive vaccinations and be checked medically before being sent to other facilities. If these children, approximately 17% of whom are below the age of 13, cannot find a lawyer, they must represent themselves in court. One pro bono lawyer told the Los Angeles Times that children in the courtroom are often confused and frightened, like the child who carried his teddy bear for comfort and another who wet his pants when he faced the judge. In response to the lack of lawyers available to these minors, the Obama administration has started a program that will distribute $2 million in federal grants to approximately 100 lawyers and paralegals in order to enroll them to represent the immigrant minors being faced with trials in immigration court. Attorney General Eric H. Holder Jr. supports this resolution. "We're taking a historic step to strengthen our justice system and protect the rights of the most vulnerable members of society," he said in an official statement. "How we treat those in need, particularly young people who must appear in immigration proceedings, many of whom are fleeing violence, persecution, abuse, or trafficking, goes to the core of who we are as a nation." The $2 million will be allocated to nonprofits in 29 U.S. cities with large numbers of immigrants. It would then be used by said nonprofits to recruit the lawyers and paralegals needed to represent the immigrant minors in court. Each enrollee will be expected to serve in the program for roughly a year. To compensate for their service, each lawyer and paralegal will receive a stipend of approximately $24,200, as well as an award for around $5,700, which can be used toward tuition or paying off student loans. In addition, after being prompted by Obama administration officials, emergency task forces have opened up facilities on two different military bases, which will be used to house up to 1,800 kids. House Republicans are attributing the influx of immigrant minors from Central America to lax border policies set in place by the Obama administration. They point to the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA, a memorandum written by President Obama in 2012 which granted adults who came to the U.S. as minors over 5 years ago increased immunities from deportation, as the reason for the sudden increase in immigrant minors. Senator Tom Harkin, a Democrat from Iowa, disagrees with the Republicans. Harkin is the chair of the subcommittee in charge of the Labor, Health, and Human Services and Education Bill, which will determine the budget for the Health and Human Services Department, or HHS. The HHS is responsible for housing, feeding, and caring for the minors after they have been processed by border officials. Harkin stated that, "From everything I've read, it's economics and it's violence." Harkin, as well as White House officials, attributes the influx of child refugees to the declining economy in Central America, as well as increases in violent crime. They believe that it is highly unlikely that children in poverty-stricken areas in Central America are as well-versed in U.S. immigration policy towards minors as Republicans claim they are. "The problem is that the border is not going to get secure on its own," said Representative Mario Diaz-Balart, a Florida Republican and GOP advocate for a discussion on immigration in Congress. "All these issues that are coming up, all these things are under the current system. If you are satisfied with the status quo, leave it exactly as it is." Diaz-Balart expressed that he is reluctant to make a push for a GOP-backed immigration bill because of his increasing distrust of President Obama in general. He has doubts that the president would be willing to compromise with Republicans by enforcing tougher border policies, which would have to be included in any immigration bill that House Republicans back. Although immigration reform is being halted by gridlock in the House over ideologies concerning border security, the president and his administration are making sure that the needs of the undocumented child immigrants are being met and that they will not be subject to the detestable conditions of the temporary housing facilities for much longer. This is Trevor Hill with East County Magazine on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Leon Thompson with today's Green Scene Report. Advocates of protecting wild wolves have some news to howl about. After two wolf pups were spotted in Oregon, just over California's northern border, the California Fish and Game Department voted to grant endangered species status to gray wolves in California, even though our state currently has no wolves. The vote came over the objections of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, as state wildlife officials agreed to grant broader protection than the federal government currently provides. The move came after a wolf named OR7 was spotted just over the California border last year, the first wild wolf seen in our state in 87 years. He later returned to Oregon, where he was successful at finding a mate. The pair has now produced at least two wolf pups, documented by photographers, and there could be more. Wolves were hunted to extinction in western states decades ago, but reintroduction of the species in the northern Rocky Mountains in the 1990s has been successful, with an estimated 60 wolves now believed to exist in the wild, including OR7, the first wolf seen west of the Cascades since 1947. Another Oregon wolf was not as fortunate. On June 5th, news broke that OR18, an Oregon wolf that wandered into Montana, had been illegally killed by a poacher. Montana officials are seeking tips that could lead to an arrest. The California Fish and Game Commission's 3-1 vote to protect wolves in our state came in response to a petition filed by the Center for Biological Diversity and other conservation groups. Amarok Weiss, the center's West Coast wolf organizer, said this is a great day for wolf recovery in the West. He added, "This is the first chapter in a long story of wolves returning to California and living here in the wild."
If you're a customer in the Helix Water District, your rates will soon be going up again. But the rate hike will be lower than predicted earlier. The district previously announced an increase averaging 6.2% over the next 2 years. Instead, the board has approved a slightly lower increase of between 4.3% and 4.5%. That works out to just under $6 a month for a household using 25 units of water. Though for those using 100 units of water, the increase will be substantially more, over $29 a month. The scaleback rate hike now proposed reflects changes planned by the San Diego County Water Authority, which will hold a public hearing on proposed rate changes on June 26. Helix will announce its budget on July 31st, with the new rates taking effect beginning the ratepayers' November bills. The budget is also expected to reflect a plan to pay down the district's unfunded pension liability over the next several years. The rate hike, while lower than forecast originally, still poses hardships for some lower-income consumers in the current economy, coming on the heels of several past rate hikes levied on water users. The district's ratepayers have done a good job in answering the call to conserve water during the drought, the district has said, but that poses a financial dilemma for the district, since ironically, the more its customers conserve water, the less money flows to the district to cover its costs for employees, repairs, and maintenance of water lines. This may not be the end of rising water costs. Deanna Verbecki, Vice President of Helix Water District, has stated that the board still faces several unknown factors that could impact future rate decisions, including rainfall levels, severity of drought, and how much water ratepayers will conserve. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ 89.1 Descanso, this is Devon Marshall.
June 15th is Father's Day, a once-a-year special day reserved to honor dear old dad. If you're looking for some special ways to celebrate, we've compiled our list of this year's top 10 ways to delight your dad and the whole family on Father's Day. Many of these are free or low cost, though we've also included a few unusual ideas for those seeking to splurge. You can find all the details on these events and activities at eastcountymagazine.org. So, without further ado, here's our list. Number 1. You can start your Father's Day celebration a day early on Saturday, June 14th by taking Dad to downtown El Cajon's new and free America on Main Street, a multicultural street fair celebrating ethnic diversity. There will be many fun attractions from 10 o'clock in the morning to 10 o'clock at night, including a petting zoo, pony rides, Ferris wheel, rock climbing wall, Fiesta Day football, street soccer, and a salute to our veterans. Number 2. Movies in the park are also great options. you can find free movies showing in several county parks. Or head to the Viejas Outlet Center in Alpine, where the park is equipped with cushy theater chairs and you can even enjoy popcorn while watching movies under the stars. Number 3. San Pascual Winery's Tasting Room in La Mesa's downtown village is hosting Sangria Sunday on Father's Day, as well as tastings for the wine connoisseur on your list. Number 4. For dads who love fishing, you can sink a line under the stars during night fishing at Santee Lakes on June 12th, a couple of days before Father's Day, or enjoy day fishing for bass, trout, and catfish all weekend. Santee Lakes also offers pedal boats, bicycle surrey rides for the whole family, and other fun activities. Number 5. Arriba! Hacienda Casablanco in El Cajon is serving up the Man It Up brunch on Father's Day from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Hungry dads can savor carnitas, carne asadas, ribs, a carving station, roasted corn, an omelet station, breakfast foods, soup, salad, fruit, tamales, enchiladas, and homemade tortillas. Number 6. Famed architect James Hubble's artistic home in Julian brings art to life at its new Ilan Leal Foundation building, which will be open for a special Father's Day tour for those seeking to savor this architectural treasure. Number 7. Plan a picnic. San Diego County is home to many wonderful parks, lakes, mountain trails, and beautiful beaches, all free or nearly so. Planning a family outing that includes a picnic, fun in the sun, and activities such as a hike, bike ride, or sandcastle build-off can make for a great Father's Day gift that everybody can afford. Number 8. If you and your father want to walk on the wild side, how about a Father's Day falconry lesson? West Coast Sky Falconry of Alpine is offering falconry lessons where Dad can learn the art of handling these birds of prey. And during the summer months, starting now, the classes are held at Torrey Pines State Beach. Number 9. For the water enthusiast and outdoor adventurer on your list, you can rent kayaks at several of San Diego County's inland lakes and reservoirs, or venture to the coast for a kayaking tour of the San Diego Bay and Point Loma. The Family Kayak Adventure Center on Shelter Island is having a Father's Day 3-hour sea lion kayak tour, special complete with kayaking lessons and tour guide. Number 10. SeaWorld is hosting a Father's Day brunch with Shamu. This behind-the-glass tank dining experience includes a special meal cooked up by the park's chefs and an up-close look at the killer whale in what promises to be a whale of an experience for dads and their families. We hope these options have given you some good ideas to delight dear old dad, and from all of us at the East County Magazine Show, we wish you a safe and happy Father's Day. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
A fishing pole or a new tie may be traditional Father's Day gifts, but experts say another important gift could be a conversation with the men in your life about taking control of their own health. Brandon Leonard with the Men's Health Network says the time spent caring for and providing for families can lead many men to neglect their own health care needs.
Men need to take responsibility for their own health so that they can be there for the birthdays and the graduations and the weddings, and so that they can enjoy life with their family and with their friends as well.
Leonard says prevention is the best medicine, and habits now will have a huge impact on what happens down the road. As part of Men's Health Week, he's encouraging men to get regular doctor checkups and think about risk factors for things such as heart disease, different types of cancers, and diabetes. Leonard says men of all ages need to focus on getting regular exercise and good nutrition.
Getting plenty of fruits and vegetables and whole grains and lean proteins, and really making a conscious decision to cut back on things like junk food, cut back on the sweets, cut back on the fried foods, because those are certainly going to have an impact on your health down the road.
He says heart disease is the number one killer of both men and women. As they age, he adds, it's important that men stay on top of their blood pressure and cholesterol and get regular screenings for certain types of cancer.
Continuing to look at things like prostate cancer, colorectal cancer, and men are also dealing sometimes with urinary tract issues. Enlarged prostate can become an issue at that point.
Across California and the country, communities are celebrating Men's Health Week with free screenings, health fairs, and other educational events. For Public News Service, I'm Lori Abbott.
A reward is being offered for information leading to the arrest of vandals who caused over $1,000 in damage at Ramona High School. The vandals threw eggs on windows, put super glue in the locks on the administration building, and spray painted the year 2014 on a sheep and a goat found in the high school stadium. The vandals cut locks on padlocks holding the animals, which were being raised by students to be shown at the fair this summer. The animals will have to be sheared to remove the paint, leaving the students who own them upset at this loss. The school has filed a malicious vandalism claim with the sheriff. Anyone with information on these pranks gone wrong is asked to call Principal Chris King at 760-787-4000. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jessica Richmond.
Federal disaster loans are now available to those who suffered property losses in the wildfires that swept through our region in May. Two disaster loan outreach centers are being set up to help residents and businesses affected by the San Diego County wildfires apply for these low-interest federal disaster loans. The disaster loan outreach centers will be open from 9:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. starting Tuesday, June 10th through Thursday, June 19th. The locations are the Carlsbad City Library Learning Center and the San Diego County Library in San Marcos. Loan amounts and terms are set by the Small Business Administration and are based on the applicant's financial condition. More information is available at sdcountyrecovery.com. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Trevor Hill.
This is Miriam Raftery with a health report. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration and the Environmental Protection Agency have issued draft updated advice on fish consumption. The agencies now recommend that pregnant and breastfeeding women, those who might become pregnant, and young children should eat more fish, but be sure it is lower in mercury to gain important developmental and health benefits. Previously, the agencies recommended maximum amounts of fish that these groups should consume, but did not promote a minimum amount. Over the past decade, however, emerging science has underscored the importance of appropriate amounts of fish in the diets of pregnant and breastfeeding women and young children. Choices that are lower in mercury include some of the most commonly eaten fish, such as shrimp, pollock, salmon, canned light tuna, tilapia, catfish, and cod. Pregnant or breastfeeding women are cautioned to avoid four types of fish that are associated with high mercury levels: tilefish from the Gulf of Mexico, shark, swordfish, and king mackerel. In addition, the draft updated advice recommends limiting consumption of white albacore tuna to just 6 ounces a week. When eating fish caught from local streams, rivers, and lakes, follow fish advisories from local authorities. If advice is not available, limit your total intake of such fish to just 6 ounces a week and 1 to 3 ounces for children. The draft updated advice is consistent with recommendations in the 2010 Dietary Guidelines for Americans. Here's what Dr. Stephen Ostroff, the FDA's acting chief scientist, has to say.
For years, many women have limited or avoided eating fish during pregnancy or feeding fish to their young children. But emerging science now tells us that limiting or avoiding fish during pregnancy and early childhood can mean missing out on important nutrients that can have a positive impact on growth and development, as well as on general health.
An FDA analysis of seafood consumption data from over 1,000 pregnant women in the United States found that 21% of them ate no fish in the previous month, and those who did eat fish ate far less than the Dietary Guidelines for Americans recommends. The draft updated advice advises pregnant women to eat at least 8 ounces and up to 12 ounces, that's 2 to 3 servings each week, of a variety of fish that are lower in mercury to support fetal growth and development. Before issuing final advice, the agencies will consider public comments and conduct a series of focus groups. For information on those meetings, you can visit federalregister.gov. This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Ariel Johansson, bringing you the most exciting festivals, events, and attractions each week. East County has plenty of activities to enjoy this weekend, including some designated for Father's Day. However, many of the events this weekend might be interesting for Dad and the family to enjoy. Plus, we have a major festival in El Cajon that is number one on our list. El Cajon's America on Main Street will be held on Saturday, June 14th, in downtown El Cajon from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. This event is a family-friendly community festival that celebrates the American spirit through appreciation and respect for the many diverse ethnic and historical groups in the community. Highlights include two stages with live entertainment, American and ethnic food booths, a Ferris wheel and other rides, arts, crafts, display booths, a petting zoo, rock wall, a Fiesta de Football street soccer event, and more. This patriotic event is planned to coincide with the nationally recognized Flag Day. Additionally, there will be a special red, white, and blue area saluting our military. The location is East Main Street and Rhea Avenue, between Magnolia and Claydale Avenues. James Hubbell's annual Father's Day open house includes the grand opening of the new Ilan Lael Foundation building, the first brand new building on Hubbell Hill in 10 years. Iconic San Diego artist, global humanitarian, and cultural leader James Hubbell once again invites the public to tour his family's magical and historically designated compound in Julian for the annual Father's Day open house on Sunday, June 15th. The archive and gallery spaces of the new building will be open for the first time ever, which will showcase some of Hubbell's most recent work. The Father's Day tour will be open to the public with tours from 11 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. or 1:30 p.m. to 4 p.m. The ticket price includes shuttle service from Winola Farms Marketplace to Hubbell Hill. Engineer for an Hour at the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum in Campo is a rare opportunity for a train enthusiast 18 years and older, maybe Dad, to take the controls of a powerful diesel railroad locomotive and power it down the track using air brake, throttle, and horn at the 40-acre Pacific Southwest Railway Museum. This activity is normally reserved for licensed locomotive engineers only. Participants are awarded a commemorative certificate. There will be opportunities to share running time with family and friends. Online reservations are required, and it is first come, first served. The museum's historic Golden State vintage passenger trains will also make a 12-mile, one-hour scenic journey to Tunnel Number 4 and return. Reservations are not required. The museum also has a gift store, free parking, and it is wheelchair-friendly. Dates for the Engineer for an Hour are this Saturday and Sunday, June 14th and 15th, and next weekend on Saturday and Sunday, June 28th and 29th, from 10 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Two Father's Day brunch events will be held in Julian on Sunday, June 15th. Cowboy Jack Johnson will be performing solo on acoustic and electric guitar on Sunday, June 15th, for a Father's Day brunch at the Pine Hills Lodge. Cowboy Jack plays country and bluegrass and roots. At times he is said to sound like Hank Williams and other times like Johnny Cash, with a little Gene Autry undercurrent to every song. He will be performing favorites from country and western music. The Pine Hills Lodge is located in Julian, and their website is www.pinehillslodge.com. Jeremy's on the Hill will be having a Father's Day brunch and specials in the Winola area just outside Julian. San Diego Ghost Hunters will be presenting a program. San Diego Ghost Hunters will be presenting a program at the El Cajon Library on East Douglas Avenue in downtown El Cajon on Saturday, June 14th from 2 to 4 p.m. So if you like reading about paranormal activity and unexplained phenomena, such as clairvoyance and ghosts, you'll enjoy this free program where guests will hear true accounts and see pictures of encounters with the other side. The movie Frozen will be featured at Movies in the Park at Viejas on Friday, June 13th at 8 p.m. Movies are enjoyed at the Outlet Center under the stars in a park setting. Children 12 and under are free to attend, but must be accompanied by an adult. Next week, on June 20th, The Avengers will be shown. Campo Kiwanis presents Barn Dance at the Star Ranch in Campo, featuring the Honky Tonk Kings Country Dance Band on Saturday, June 14th, from 8 p.m. to 1 a.m. A barbecue dinner will be served from 7 to 10 p.m. The event is for those adults 21 and over with ID. There will be door prizes, and all proceeds benefit Kiwanis Projects. Country star Ronnie Millsap will be performing at Sequan Casino on Saturday, June 14th at 8:30 p.m. Sequan Casino is located in El Cajon. Free Comedy Fridays are featured at the Space Bar Internet Cafe on University Avenue in La Mesa. Shows this month are on Friday, June 13th, 20th, and 27th, and run from 7:30 p.m. to 9:15 p.m. Tour Nature is a leisurely hike amid the scenic landscapes and historic grounds of Old Mission Dam, starting at the Kumeyaay Lake Campground in Mission Trails Regional Park on Saturday, June 14th, from 8:30 a.m. to 10 a.m. Hikers can get some fun facts as the MTRP Naturalist Guide unwraps secrets of nature during the hike. Hikers meet at the campground entry station. This hike will also be offered on Saturday, June 28th, at the same time. The Visitor Center for Mission Trails Regional Park is not far from the Kumeyaay Lake Campground, and on Saturday, June 14th, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., is presenting Lizard Lifestyles, a free hands-on science program presented by MTRP Trail Guides, where guests can learn about various lizards found in the park. Guests can get the scoop on lizard lifestyles and try their skill at matching each lizard with its identity clues. After the weekend on Tuesday, the El Cajon City Council is recognizing El Cajon Crest native Jimmy Johnson, NASCAR champion, for his racing accomplishments and philanthropic contributions to the community on Tuesday, June 17th, from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. at Centennial Plaza. El Cajon Mayor Bill Wells, the City Council, Joel Anderson, and other local dignitaries will be honoring Johnson during a special ceremony beginning promptly at 11 a.m. Special presentations are planned. To date, Johnson's Foundation has given more than $6.5 million to schools here in El Cajon and across the nation. Due to Jimmy's hectic schedule and the crowds expected, this is not an autograph opportunity event. But Jimmy's number 48 show car will be on display, and special Team 48 photo cards will be available while supplies last. Now for a preview of two upcoming summer-only events soon to begin and a blues event. The City of Santee's Summer Concert Series begins June 19th with an expanded lineup featuring performances by 11 well-established regional bands. The free concerts are held Thursdays at 6:30 p.m., except for the week of July 4th holiday, at Town Center Community Park East in Santee. The live bands performing this summer include rock, country, blues, tribute bands for the Beatles and Elvis, and more. New this year, each concert will have a theme that is integrated into the entire experience, so food offered for sale will be different each concert, depending on the theme. Outdoor movies at Santee Lakes will begin on June 27th this year. The Movies by the Lake series includes games and activities for children before the movie, and of course picnicking, with lots of grass, picnic tables, and a playground nearby. A snack bar is available. The 16th annual Julian Blues Bash will be held at Mangini Winery in Julian on Saturday, June 21st. Gates open at 10 a.m. and six great blues bands will play till 7 p.m. There will be free parking, and tickets are on sale at the Julian Chamber office in the Town Hall on Main Street and at www.rob-bauerpresents.com. Children 12 and under are free. That's all for this week. All of these events and more can be found on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at www.eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is supported by our listeners and by a community enhancement grant from San Diego County. See you around, East County!
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, from the mountains to the sea.
The curtain may soon be rising at the East County Performing Arts Center in the city of El Cajon. Now the city has issued a request for statement of interest for groups interested in using the theater. The deadline for submittal is Monday, June 16th at 5 o'clock p.m. Anchor tenants or partners should be willing to utilize the facility for substantial periods of time during at least the next 5 years. The Rock Church has already made a proposal to the city, which is under consideration, and the city is now reaching out to see if there may be other interested parties. The City Council has expressed intent to renovate and reopen the Performing Arts Center in the near future, with a likely opening in 2015, according to a statement issued by the city. The building has been closed for several years, falling into disrepair. Prior to completing the renovation design plans or commencing construction, the city wishes to determine if there are potential long-term tenants in the marketplace. City Manager Doug Williford says, "Reopening of the East County Performing Arts Center will be an exciting event not only for El Cajon, but for the entire region. With a 1,145-seat capacity, this is one of the largest indoor event centers within the region and has a long history of being host to many memorable performing arts and entertainment events." Williford concluded, "As we prepare the center for its bright future, it is important to the city that we investigate important opportunities to ensure the facility's long-term success. For more information or a request for statement of interest from potential anchor tenants, visit the city's website at www.cityofelcajon.us. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Helen Ofield from the Lemon Grove Historical Society, bringing you the sounds of history. The sound of hoofbeats, the smell of sagebrush, the brilliant blue sky overhead. This is the world of my guest today, Gary McClintock, president of McClintock Saddleworks in Descanso, and one of East County's most famous residents. McClintock is to saddles what Willie Shoemaker was to horse racing. Their skills are enormous and particular. Gary, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Helen. That's well said and a little overstated, but thank you so much for such a nice introduction.
Oh,
I appreciate that.
Never, Gary, never overstated. I think you're one of the most popular people in East County and in the horse world.
I hope I don't have to live up to that.
You're such a Westerner, but where were you born and how long have you lived in East County?
Well, actually, I was born in Santa Monica, California, so I've lived my whole life in California. Came to San Diego in the 60s for college and have moved out to East County about that same time and kind of felt that this was a nice spot for me, so I've been there ever since.
So you were a city boy.
We lived on the beach, actually, Helen.
Oh, golly.
In a place called Playa del Rey. So we started on the coast of California in the 50s. I was born in 1948, and we lived in a little place called Playa del Rey, which is right on the coast, underneath the airport, pretty close to that.
My goodness, this makes you a quintessential Californian because you have experienced everything from the coast, the beautiful coast, the freeways, the incessant traffic, the smog. And what lured you to East County, to Descanso?
Well, actually, I was here for college at San Diego State.
Oh, yes.
And at that time, I actually moved to East County with a group of friends, college students that needed a place to live. And we found a little place in Pine Valley back in about 1967, 68.
I have seen your custom saddles, and they are stunning. How long have you been making saddles?
Well, actually, Helen, we started in 1973, so this is my 40th year. We're celebrating our 40th anniversary right now. This is actually 40 years of building saddles.
What drives a young man to want to do that?
I think the desire to live out of town was the start. I wanted to work with my hands. I come from a family of dentists. who also work with their hands, you see. But I was kind of a kickback of the hippie era and had to get out of town and live in the mountains and be away from the city. And it stuck with me. And I found saddles was something a friend recommended that I could. We were making belts before that. And then the recommendation came along and I went to a school to learn how to build them because it was something I could do on my own, one at a time. I didn't have to be a factory or a manufacturer, which is what we became as belt makers. We got to the point where we were manufacturing belts for Pennies and Sears and people like that. Then I thought, no, I just want to be the custom little maker that I seen down in Mexico, to tell you the truth, down in San Blas, Mexico, on a surfing voyage. We were down in the square there and observed some artisans making belts and handbags and saddles. Well, not saddlebags, sandals, and then handbags. So we had the opportunity to enjoy that and thought, well, this guy has a pretty decent lifestyle. Right here on the coast, he can just do what he wants and sell it and catch waves when...
There's a real cultural context for this. The 1970s are often referred to as the time of the rebirth of the American craftsman. And there was a tremendous interest at that time in the handcrafted item. And actually, who was in the White House then? Mrs. Mondale.
Oh, really?
Made a big deal about bringing handmade pottery into the White House and serving dinners and whatnot on things made by artisans from America. So you were right in that groove. On average, if there is an average, how long does it take to design and make a Western saddle?
It's a good 7-day project. It takes a good 7 days to complete it. As long as it doesn't have a lot of the floral tooling, the carving or tooling, that takes somewhat more time. You could put another 40 hours into that if it was fully carved, you know, with the carving that you see, the floral decoration.
So someone comes to you and says, I must have a Western saddle. It needs to look in a certain way. It's on this particular kind of horse.
Exactly. I get a lot of people that come to me because they can't find first something that's going to work for their horse. So I accommodate that particular type of a horse by fitting the horse, you might say. I go out and take a look at it, which is what I'm going to do this afternoon. I'm on my way to Ramona this afternoon to take a look at a guy's horse and make sure that we get the right size saddle for him. His vet recommended that he come to me because I have a reputation of accommodating that type of a need. So that's where a lot of it starts there. A lot of it starts with people who can't find the style of saddle they prefer, let alone the size seat that fits them in that style with that fit for the horse. So there's three features there that they have to accommodate, and your typical manufactured products don't do that.
You know, when I was researching this topic, I came across a man who chewed the leather and pounded it with a mallet to make it pliable. And I assume you are not chewing the leather, but if you are, don't hesitate to share. Where do you get saddle leather? And do you have a favorite kind?
Well, there's a couple of tanneries left in the United States. The best tannery for that particular type of a vegetable tan leather, it's quite thick leather. It's done back in St. Louis. They do the best quality for saddles. There's been others, and there still are other makers, but a lot of EPA, Environmental Protection Agency stuff, has driven certain tanneries out of different areas like Los Angeles. There was quite a few makers there. A lot of it's being done in China, Mexico, out of the state and imported back. But the particular leather that I use comes out of St. Louis, Missouri, the Herman Oaks Tanning Company. So it's made here in the United States still. And it's just a real good quality leather all the way around. For all the features I need. I mean, I need a certain thickness. I need a leather that will tool easily, mold easily to the tree that I make the saddle upon.
Okay, the tree is the wooden...
It's the wooden frame that's been covered with rawhide.
Okay.
rawhide is untanned leather.
Gary, is there any one saddle maker in history who inspired you?
Not an individual, but a company called the Visalia Saddle Company of California. I became, along the way, I got quite interested in historical stuff, California stuff, California Vaquero. I was consulted by a member, a guy named Ibanez from the Times newspaper up in Los Angeles. He requested a saddle out of this old catalog. This is like maybe 1975, 76. And it had some particular decoration on it that was braiding. It was rawhide braiding. And I just loved the look of it. And so I, from his request, I had to learn how to do all this stuff. And I went to, here in San Diego, there was a gentleman in the mountains out in Descanso named Granville Martin. And I spent time with him learning how to prepare this rawhide and then how to apply it to the saddle and make a nice decorative trim on the saddle, which is what Visalia used to do.
Nice.
And I thought, well, this is great. And so I've done a lot of saddles over the years that have that rawhide trim on it.
Gary, is it fair to say that your saddles are all over the United States?
Oh, absolutely.
All over North America?
Europe, quite a few there. Quite a few in northern Mexico. I sold saddles to cowboys and vaqueros down in, starting in about Tecate and maybe down as far as Ensenada. And I know there's even further, about halfway down the peninsula where we filmed the video, Corazon Vaquero, there's a couple of guys down there that I traded some saddles for.
Gary, that's a great segue. We're going to come back and renew this conversation. We're almost out of time. But Gary is not riding off into the sunset just yet. We're going to continue this conversation next time. Sit around, maybe chew some leather.
Probably not, hopefully, right?
Gary McClintock, thank you for coming. For the Sounds of History, I'm Helen O'Field.
A fire has claimed the life of a resident in a lakeside mobile home park. On Tuesday, June 10th at 10 a.m., Heartland Fire and Santee Sheriff deputies responded to the blaze in the Shangri-La Mobile Home Park near Lake Jennings in Lakeside. After extinguishing a blaze that had engulfed the burned-out home, firefighters found a body inside, said Sergeant Dave Martinez. Deputies learned that two nurses at a nearby restaurant ran to the mobile home and pulled a woman out to safety, saving her life from the burning building. But a man inside died at the scene. The victim has not yet been identified pending notification of family. An investigation is ongoing to determine the cause of the blaze. If you have any information on the fire, please contact the Sheriff's Department at 858-565-5200, or you can remain anonymous by calling Crime Stoppers at 888-580-8477. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
If you're angling for a fish dinner or just enjoy catch-and-release fishing, you can drop a line into Santee Lakes where night fishing kicks off on June 12th. There are a total of 5 night fishing dates coming up, June 12th and 26th, July 20th and 24th, and August 7th from 5 p.m. to 11 p.m. on Lakes 1, 2, 3, and 4. Bring a lantern, no fishing licenses required, and no radios are allowed to disturb the silence of the evening or the fish. The lakes have been stocked with 8,000 pounds of catfish so far this season, with more coming on June 6th. Raymond Paul caught the largest so far, a whopping 4-pounder, in Lake 4 using hot dogs and mealworms as bait. The bass are biting in all lakes, according to the Santee Lakes Fishing Report, though Lakes 1 and 5 have been the hot spots. You can also catch bluegill by fishing around the cattails or off the docks. Santee Lakes has 5 docks plus 4 fishable islands, making this a fun destination to bring the kids and get them hooked on fishing. You can get more information or sign up for free fishing reports, including tasty fish recipes at www.santeelakes.com. This is Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine.
Thank you. world-famous Harlem Globetrotters have entertained millions of fans in 122 countries over the past 88 years. Now the team, famed for its comedy basketball routines, is bringing fun summer basketball clinics to kids in San Diego and East County. The Harlem Globetrotters are teaming up with 24-Hour Fitness in the Santee, College Grove, and Balboa areas for clinics coached by Globetrotter star players. The two-hour clinics will be offered mornings and afternoons during late June at each of these locations. Globetrotter star Dizzy Grant says, quote, "It doesn't matter what skill level you are, every kid will have a blast at our summer clinics." The clinics not only teach basketball skills, but also how to be a good teammate, both on and off the court. Plus, kids get photos and an autograph session with Globetrotters players. Clinics are open to boys and girls of all skill levels, ages 6 to 12. For more information and to find the clinic nearest you, visit www.harlemglobetrotters.com/clinics. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Ed Barrena.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.